Thank you so much. It is 6 minutes past the hour, and welcome to Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents. Jennifer Joyner, talented nurse practitioner in the cardiology department of Deborah Heart and Lung Center, and Jennifer is the coordinator of the Structural Heart Disease Program. Just to share a little bit about Jennifer's great background, certifications, adult gerontology, primary care nurse practitioner, critical care nurse, cardiac surgery subspecialty, postmaster's certificate, advanced practice nursing, adult gerontology, primary care nurse practitioner, Monmouth University, West Long Branch, New Jersey, master of science in nursing, nursing education, Monmouth University, again, West Long Branch, New Jersey, and her bachelor of science in nursing, James Madison University in Harrisonburg, Virginia. And this is a return engagement. We have visited with Jennifer in the past and really have a great time. Our topic this half hour on Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents, Jennifer Joyner, is living with heart valve disease. So a lot to unpack. We're going to get right to it. Jennifer, welcome back. Great to be with you.
Thank you, Harry. It's great to be here.
It is a pleasure. So let's get right into it. What is heart valve disease? And a follow-up right off the bat, how does it affect your heart?
Well, I like to think the heart is like a house. It has four rooms, two upstairs, two downstairs, right and left. Between these rooms, or chambers as we call them, there are four one-way doors. These doors are your heart valves. On the right side of the heart, we have the tricuspid valve and the pulmonic valve. They help guide the blood into the lungs to pick up oxygen. On the left side of the heart, we have the mitral valve and the aortic valve. These valves allow the oxygenated blood to come back into the main pumping chamber of the heart, which ejects it to feed the rest of the body. Now, if one of these valves or more of these valves become tight and stuck or loose and leaky or deformed, then blood no longer flows the right way in a smooth, coordinated fashion. This will become quite taxing on the heart muscle over time to try and deliver enough oxygenated blood to the rest of the body. So valve disease essentially leads to heart failure over time. Mm. And some people have a problem with one valve, but it's not uncommon to have problems with multiple valves, especially in advanced disease.
Wow. What an important beginning right there. Jennifer Joyner, Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents. Jennifer, and our topic, living with heart valve disease. I love the premise, living with heart valve disease, because the alternative is not acceptable. What are the most common kinds of heart valve disease, Jennifer?
So we generally focus on whether the valve won't open well. We call that stenosis, where the valve gets stiff and the overall opening gets smaller, such as aortic stenosis, or a valve that won't close fully, so it ends up leaking backwards. And we call that regurgitation or insufficiency, like mitral regurgitation. And mitral regurgitation and aortic stenosis are the two most common type of valve problems that we see.
What are the symptoms for someone listening right now that might not even realize, just might say, oh, you know, I'm just getting older, so I'm this or that. What are the common symptoms of heart valve disease that people should watch out for?
So the most common valve-related symptoms include exertional fatigue, shortness of breath with exertion, especially with inclines or with stairs, new or worsening swelling in your feet or legs, passing out or nearly passing out, chest pain with exertion, and sometimes palpitations. I would say that oftentimes it's family members that will report seeing a general overall slowing down of activity levels. You know, maybe you used to go out every day and now you just don't really feel like going out as much. But like you said, people often chalk it up to getting older, but please do not ignore these symptoms and assume that it's normal, a normal part of aging, because it's not.
We hear about familial things, heredity, and all that. Sort of a bonus wild card question, Jennifer, is that true with heart valve issues, that if it can it run in the family?
So sometimes we have valve disease that runs in family, particularly a congenital defect called bicuspid valve or bicuspid aortic valve. The aortic valve is a three leaflet valve, but in some people you're born with two leaflet valves. And sometimes I'll hear people say, well, you know, I've been told I've had a murmur my entire life. And, you know, some of these can be benign. Some of them can be mitral valve prolapse, also very common, especially in women. But if you've had a murmur all your life, or if you have a congenital defect, that valve may wear out much sooner, like in your 50s and 60s versus 70s to 80s. So yes, yeah, some valve problems can run in families.
When should someone see their healthcare provider if they suspect that they have heart valve disease or they're experiencing some of these symptoms that you're talking about, Jennifer?
Yeah, so a lot of these symptoms cross over into many issues that we have, not just heart valve disease. So I'm a strong believer in routine annual physical exams with a primary care provider who knows you best and can detect small changes in your routine, your activity, and your health over time. But if you've recently developed any of these symptoms, say over the past 3 to 6 months, it's never too late. You know, definitely make an appointment for a physical exam, and they may end up referring you to a cardiologist for further testing and recommendations if they feel that it may be coming from the heart. But it's also important to be screened for valve disease if you already have certain medical conditions that can contribute to development or worsening of heart valve disease. And these conditions include heart failure, atrial fibrillation, presence of a pacemaker or defibrillator, a history of infection, such as rheumatic valve disease or rheumatic heart disease as a kid, bloodstream infections from dental abscesses or IV drug use history, heart attacks, blockages in the arteries, congenital defects, as we had discussed. If you have inflammatory or connective tissue disease, sometimes this can impact the heart valves as well. And also the benefit of time. If you've been lucky enough to live well into your senior years, you've earned the right to be screened for valve disease that's based just solely on age.
Masterclass. We are visiting with Jennifer Joyner, Deborah Heart and Lung Center presents. Jennifer, this morning, in an important discussion about living with heart valve disease, I want to follow up on something that you brought up, because sometimes people, they only go to a doctor or to urgent care, or if they have a primary care physician, and we urge everyone to have one for the reasons that Jennifer just laid out a few minutes ago. But I want to follow up on that, because people hear things like, oh, it's really important to have a baseline. It is really important to know where you were, because if all of a sudden you come back for your next annual physical and your well check, if suddenly something is different within the course of that year, that would mean that you're hopefully picking up on it at an early time and that it's not something that's going to progress. So that annual physical, annual well check, and as you know, a lot of healthcare benefits now pay for that visit because it's that proactive and important, isn't it?
Absolutely. Screening saves lives. The earlier you can pick something up, especially if you're still feeling well, and the easier it gets to be treated, the more successful the outcome is, the better you'll do. I'd much rather have someone come in walking in on their own 2 feet rather than coming in a wheelchair full of fluid, more urgent or emergent, when there may be permanent damage to the heart muscle, even if we do address the valve. So absolutely, come early, come often. I'd much rather see the patients who have valve disease that isn't ready to be addressed, but I meet them early and we can get them into a routine and see them, you know, every 6 months or eventually every 3 months until the time is right to pull the trigger and address that valve disease when they're still strong, feeling healthy, and it minimizes the risk of complications when we do need to address it.
So important. Jennifer Joyner is our distinguished guest on Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents, and the topic is living with heart valve disease. Notice the title is not dying with heart valve disease. It's living with heart valve disease, which is the whole point. To make an appointment, to do what Jennifer is talking about here, you can do so digitally. Any digital device, demanddeborah.org, or if you prefer to call and speak with a human being, 609-621-2080, 609-621-2080. In terms of how heart valve disease is diagnosed, are there tests, are there screenings that can help you detect it early? What are your thoughts relative to that, Jennifer?
Yeah, well, the most basic way to tell that you may have valve disease is with a good old-fashioned physical exam. So long before you develop symptoms from a valve problem, a provider can pick up changes in the sound of your heart valves just with a stethoscope. So, you know, and I mentioned this the last time I was on, but the sound of our heart, that lub dub, is not the sound of the heart pumping, but the sound of our heart valves. And each valve has its own place in the chest where we can listen to it. We know what it should sound like, and tight and leaky valves have distinct sounds that are different than the usual. And those abnormal sounds, we generalize and call them murmurs, but that's the easiest way to pick up that something may be going on with this valve or that valve that we may want to take a deeper look at. And the next natural non-invasive screening tool is the use of an echo, which is an ultrasound, little jelly on the chest. Takes a good echo, should take about 45 minutes to get some really great pictures of all four valves plus other parts of the heart as well. But that will also tell us very clearly if you've got any tight or leaky valves or deformed valves that we need to take a closer look at.
We're visiting. It's 17 minutes past the hour. We're visiting with Jennifer Joyner from the Department of Cardiology at Deborah Heart and Lung Center. Jennifer is the coordinator of the Structural Heart Disease Program at Deborah Heart and Lung Center. And the topic this half hour is living with heart valve disease. Can you still live an active lifestyle if you have heart valve disease? And what kind of physical activity do you deem safe?
Absolutely. We want everybody to be living as active a lifestyle as possible, especially as we get senior in life. Walking, easy biking, yoga, chair exercises are generally safe for people with all types of valve disease. If you have severe aortic stenosis, though, a severe tightening of that last valve before the blood leaves the heart, there are some more, you know, serious concerns about what kinds of activities you can do with that. For that, I would strongly recommend to avoid any activity considered strenuous, such as lifting weights or aggressive sports play, as well as avoiding low blood pressure, dehydration. This can be dangerous for people with significant aortic stenosis.
We only take one break during Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents, and we're going to do so right now and come back strong in just a few minutes. We're visiting with Jennifer Joyner from the Department of Cardiology at Deborah Heart and Lung Center, where Jennifer is the coordinator of the Structural Heart Disease Program at Deborah Heart and Lung Center, to make an appointment. We're talking today about heart valve issues, but to make an appointment, you can do so digitally, any digital device, your smartphone, laptop, desktop, iPad, you name it, demanddeborah.org. It's that simple, and you'll see, I believe it's a red block hyperlink to making an appointment. You can't miss it. Or you can call 609-621-2080. 609-621-2080. Very important question that Jennifer will address when we come back. How do people with heart valve disease typically manage their condition on a day-to-day basis? Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents. Jennifer Joyner, more when we come back. Thank you. It's 22 minutes past the hour with Jennifer Joyner. I am Hurley in the Morning. It's Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents. Jennifer Joyner, and the topic this half hour is living with heart valve disease. And we touched on this, teased it right before the break. Jennifer, how do people with heart valve disease typically manage their condition on a day-to-day basis? I imagine it's probably one of the most important questions that you'll address during this half-hour program, because that's every day of someone's life managing something that they're dealing with. Your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. Education is a big part of what I do on a daily basis, because most valve disease takes years to progress to the point where we need to repair or replace the valve. So patients will be living with their valve disease for years. So consistent day-to-day management, monitoring, picking up subtle changes is really important, and pairing with your provider to make sure that you're on track, maintaining your symptom status where it is, picking up when the valve disease is getting worse. So we recommend at a minimum that patients keep an eye on their daily weights, their blood pressure, their heart rate. It's a great first step in managing when there may be subtle changes, identifying early signs that something may be changing in the background. Reporting new or worsening symptoms is also recommended. You know, unfortunately, it's common for people to cut back the type and intensity of the activities they enjoy so that they don't elicit those symptoms. So, you know, sometimes I ask, how are you doing? Oh, I'm fine. I'm not out of breath. I'm not, you know, everything's fine. But their family will say, well, he's fine because he's not going out out anymore. He's not playing golf anymore. He's cut back his activity to the point where he has minimal symptoms, but really the valve disease is getting worse in the background. So it's important to stay in touch with your provider as things are changing day to day so that we can help determine is something changing with your valve disease in the background.
Jennifer, that is such an important point. The misnomer, I'm doing great, because you've had to completely turn off living and now you're existing and you have a total sedentary lifestyle, because anything more than just, you know, walking from one room to another and you're out of breath and exhausted, that's not a win.
Right.
Wow. What are the common treatment options? I know a lot of people listening are thinking, hey, they're talking about living with heart valve disease. And I guess they figure we mean you always keep the valves just as they are, because obviously there are people listening that have actually had heart valve replacements, whether it's been, you know, synthetic or whatever, or you know, the different types that are available. What are the common treatment options for heart valve disease? How do doctors decide what is right for each patient?
Great question. So your general cardiologist will monitor progression of valve disease for a while. And like I said, sometimes for years. But at some point, as they become more concerned that the echo is showing that the valve disease is progressing to a more moderate to severe or severe tightening or leaking, and your symptoms are starting to get worse, there will come a point in time where we need to kind of pull the trigger and be seen by valve specialists. And that's where Debora comes into play. So when patients are referred to Debora's valve specialists, we use a heart team approach to evaluate your valve disease. So when you come here, you will meet with a multidisciplinary team of doctors and nurse practitioners who specialize in traditional open heart surgery as well as less invasive transcatheter procedures. So we all bring our unique specialties to the table to comprehensively evaluate your valve disease from both a surgical and interventional cardiology standpoint. We also have expert valve imaging specialists here who can take exceptionally detailed pictures of your valves, which really help us make recommendations and discuss appropriate procedural options, as well as the best time to intervene. And, you know, sometimes we recommend traditional surgery, but more often than not these days, we can address your valve disease through small puncture sites in the groin with transcatheter procedures that can send you home the next day.
Wow.
I liken it to cataracts. You know, sometimes when we have cataracts, the doctor says, you're not ready. And you say, well, I can't drive at night. You know, the lights are bothering me. I'm having symptoms. No, not yet. And the same is true with valve disease. Sometimes even when you have symptoms from the valve disease, we don't feel it's quite ready to be repaired or replaced. You know, we always have to weigh the risks versus the benefits of going in and doing a procedure for someone. So, but we'll work with you on that. We may say, come back in 3 months or 6 months for reevaluation. Sometimes we're recommending just medication adjustment for now to help delay that need for a procedure. But the heart team, all of us, our approach centers on each individual patient's story, their background, their life goals, their personal preferences, social situation, support system, medical history, and valve anatomy. So we always strive to recommend the right procedure for the right patient at the right time.
Jennifer, if you and your team, if you ultimately decide that you have to replace a heart valve, how do you go about deciding? And I guess the patient has input as well, like if they have a preference, if it could be more than one. But for example, mechanical valve or a valve made from cow, pig, or I think even from human heart tissue and things. How do you decide what's the best way to go?
Great question. And of course, it's going to be individualized, so I can't give you a good cookie cutter recipe. However, typically younger patients, 50 years old, 60 years old, otherwise healthy, no major medical going on, we typically recommend that they start with a traditional open heart surgery. And there's many different types of surgery. There's traditional open heart surgery. There's a minimally invasive open heart surgery. There's tissue valves. There's mechanical metal valves. And all of that depends on their age, their overall health, their ability to take blood thinners. If they have a mechanical valve, they need to be on lifelong blood thinners for that. But typically, it's one surgery, and that's it for life. It should last their lifetime. And that's the other thing. With people living longer, we not only have to take into account which valve are we doing today, but perhaps what their next valve replacement will look like 15, 20 years down the road. If the younger you are when you visit us, the more likely you're going to need another valve in your future. Taking the transcatheter approach through the groin, there's a lot of different options that we have now to both repair and replace valves using the groin approach. And, you know, traditionally that was reserved for older patients, more complex, multiple medical conditions, people that were traditionally higher risk for surgery. But now a lot more people, moderate risk, even lower risk patients, have the option for transcatheter valves, and we're happy to provide that.
Jennifer Joyner is our distinguished guest, and the topic this half hour on Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents is living with heart valve disease. I really enjoyed listening to that. I mean, that was a clinic that you just put on. How does heart valve disease and treatment affect a person's quality of life? And this is important. What kind of challenges do patients face in this regard?
Well, I mean, listen, when you're dealing with being out of breath, being tired, swelling, you know, getting dizzy, chest pain, you know, with activity, I mean, it impacts everything you do every single day. And since valve disease, for the most part, does not occur overnight, and we're not going to be replacing or repairing this valve sometimes for years, you know, it directly impacts your quality of life every single day. It really puts a damper on the kinds of activities that you can do and at what level. You know, golfers are no longer walking the course, or they're cutting back to doing nine holes. Sometimes they give up playing entirely. We see a lot of pickleball players these days, and a lot of times they come in saying, I can't play as aggressively as I'm used to. I can't play multiple games. I'm getting tired. People are no longer going to Atlantic City, which is something they love to do because it's just too exhausting. People who love to go out shopping, eating, you know, multiple times a week may now be only going out once or twice because they can't take getting out and you know, spending a full day being active. There are other people who can't even make their beds and take a shower without Wow. having to take a break. You know, they're just exhausted, or they can't sleep at night because when they lay down, they feel like the fluid is coming up and they wake up out of breath and anxious. So it's a real damper on the quality of life. However, when they manage their valve disease, when they eventually have it repaired or replaced, it's an incredibly satisfying process to watch because they really come back to life. Now, if they have other medical conditions such as heart failure, you know, they're still dealing with the heart failure aspect of their heart problems, but the valve disease is a very satisfying process to watch them be treated.
Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents, Jennifer Joyner from the Department of Cardiology. Jennifer is the coordinator of the Structural Heart Disease Program at Deborah Heart and Lung Center. To make an appointment, and this would be a very important appointment to make if you are dealing with today's topic, in your own individual circumstances, to make an appointment, you can go to demanddeborah.org, right to the website, or you can call 609-621-2080. That's 609-621-2080. This also, I think, is a big deal question. What role do medications play in managing heart valve disease, and how do they help with the symptoms, Jennifer?
Sure. So for some valve problems, we use water pills to help decrease the shortness of breath and the swelling that some of this valve disease can cause. You know, whether it's a tight valve or a leaking valve, the blood is backing up. It's not going forward as it should. So oftentimes it's creating that congestion in the lungs. It's creating a backup of blood flow down to the legs and swelling. So the water pills is one of the medication categories that we'll use to help decrease some of that congestion. But we also use medications to help control blood pressure and heart rate control. We also have the benefit of having advanced heart failure here at Deborah, and we utilize a lot of advanced heart failure medications that can not only address the symptoms of valve disease, but also protecting the heart from further decompensation into heart failure. So we kind of use it. It sounds like a lot, and I know everyone loves taking 100 pills a day, but we utilize a lot of these medications to help protect the heart, decrease the symptoms, while addressing, you know, their quality of life.
In some of the bonus questions, we did sort of kind of address this, but I want it to be a standalone question to give you a chance to really delve into this. And we have 2 minutes. I can't believe it, but we're in the two-minute drill with Jennifer Joyner. What procedures, Jennifer, are available to treat heart valve disease?
So aside from traditional surgery, the transcatheter options that are now available for aortic stenosis, we have the acronym, it's called TAVR, transcatheter aortic valve replacement. For tight mitral valves, we can evaluate to see if you're eligible for a TMVR, transcatheter mitral valve replacement. For leaky mitral valves, we can put clips on them. It's called TEER, transcatheter edge-to-edge repair of the mitral valve. The tricuspid valve is the newest valve that has FDA-approved procedures, minimally invasive. Tri-clip is one of them, as well as a replacement valve for the tricuspid space, all of which goes through the groin with overnight stays. So we're really blessed and excited that the structural heart field is exploding with new minimally invasive options that can really impact the quality of life, quantity of life in a minimally invasive way.
Jennifer, final minute, final question. How important is follow-up care for heart valve disease patients? And I think this is also really important. What does it typically involve after treatment or surgery?
So there's always going to be a period of physical recovery and as well as a period of reconditioning to get the rest of your body back in better shape. And of course, that timeline is very different between the two types of procedures. Traditional surgery may take 4 to 6 weeks for basic procedural recovery and up to 3 months for reconditioning through a cardiac rehab exercise program. Transcatheter procedures may take 3 to 5 days on average for those puncture sites to seal up and then reconditioning through a cardiac rehab program. But once you're a heart patient, you're always a heart patient. So we always recommend annual screenings, annual echo, again, to pick up those subtle changes behind the scenes long before the new valves start to degenerate in 10, 15, 20 years. So once you're a heart patient, we've got you. We want you coming back every year.
Jennifer, I really enjoy the time we spend together. Jennifer Joyner from the Department of Cardiology at Deborah Heart and Lung Center. And that is for today, living with heart valve disease. To make an appointment, either on the web, demanddeborah.org, or you can call 609-621-2080. Jennifer, was there anything in sort of closing that you wanted to share that you didn't have a chance to share through the questions we posed?
No, I really appreciate your time, Harry, and it's really great to get the message out to people all across South Jersey that you can live with valve disease, you can live very well for very long with valve disease, but it's really important to partner with a cardiologist, with a good care provider that's going to keep an eye on you and send you up to the right specialists when it's time to address the valve itself, and we're here for it, so please consider Deborah. Thank you.
Absolutely. A masterclass clinic put on by Jennifer Joyner. Jennifer, thank you. Until next time.
Thanks, Harry.
You are welcome. So good.